Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today we're going to take a break from our coverage of London.
We will be back because we have some more exciting places to cover, but we thought maybe you'd like to have a different subject and something that you could actually use directly yourself in your own kitchen rather than having to go to London and make reservations. So this program's devoted to flavor.
Pure and simple flavors.
Some exotic flavors, and right at the end, some flavors that aren't perhaps quite so exotic, but are interesting, and especially to many Americans, even so. So starting out, a fascinating character with shall we say, a diverse background, and 41. Don't ask me why, only 41 different herb flavorings, seasonings, or whatever you might like to call them. That he's concocted, that he sells in his shop, and that he explains to you how to use in a book that was just published. So, what's the gentleman's name?
This gentleman and a charmer is Lior Lev Sirkars. And listen to this conversation. And we have here for you today, listeners, a man of some mystery. His name is Lior Lev Sirkars, and he is, what would you call yourself, Lior, a spice blender?
Sure, that's a good description.
What else would you call yourself?
Well, I worked as a chef for over 20 years, so
right.
I still do things that are somehow involved in that, although I do not longer work in a restaurant. So I cook, I blend spices, I bake biscuits, and I curate art. So there are a lot of titles.
I missed the art part. What about art?
I also curate or deal with artists in some respect.
I see. Okay. The business in question is called La Boite.
That is correct.
Yeah, now, you yourself are Israeli by birth, are you?
I am.
And where did this whole concept of chefing come from, and particularly the focus on spices?
I worked for 20 years in restaurants all over the world, and just realized that there was a serious lack of knowledge when it came to spices and seasoning.
Which is true.
And I started doing a lot of research, encouraged by my good friend and mentor and old boss, Olivier Olinger, to study the world of spices. And the more I read, and the more I became fascinated with it, and the more it was clear to me that this might be my call, if you will, in life, is to revive a very old culture of spice trading, and bring my knowledge of cooking and baking to the professional chefs as well as the home cooks.
Right. Now, your shop, La Boite à Épices, is in New York City.
The shop is called La Boite, period.
Okay, and you have two sections of it. One is spices, and the other is?
Biscuits.
Biscuits.
Correct.
Yeah, could you explain that a bit? What sort of biscuits, and how do those two parts interact?
The first activity, La Boite à Biscuits, which stands for the biscuit box or the cookie box, because a lot of people, when they hear the word biscuit, think of biscuits and gravy, which isn't the case.
I don't. I wouldn't think of biscuits.
What I do is I create two collections a year, a fall, winter, and a spring, summer. Each of these collections has five different biscuits with five different flavors using dried fruits and nuts, but also quite a bit of spices, in the idea that you could use spices also in desserts and baking. To that, I add another layer, which is the art. I invite every 6 months an artist to collaborate with me, and we design and decorate the box of the biscuits with artwork by a different artist each time. as well as putting together a show at the store here at La Boite with the original artwork of that same artist.
I think that's a beautiful idea.
So that's part one. Part two is the spices, whereas I create spice blends. There are officially 41 spice blends that are available here at La Boite or online. And the idea behind these blends is that they have no specific usage or recommended usage. I really welcome people and invite people to do whatever they choose to do with them. They are not meant for one particular preparation. They are made with about 120 different ingredients from all over the world. Everything gets here whole as much as possible, toasted, ground, and mixed into the different spice recipes.
Now, spice blends are traditional around the world anyway. I mean, they've been around forever. For example, I did some lamb chops last night with Herbes de Provence, and that's sort of a known entity. Then if you're looking for spicier, you have garam masala, and you have harissa, which are traditional spice blends known in their countries and their cuisines. How did you decide to go about creating whole new ones?
How did I decide to go about creating blends?
Yeah, whole new spice blends that perhaps have never existed before.
I think that the main thing, as I mentioned earlier, I just traveled quite a bit, and one of the things that kept on coming back is that people usually use blends because they are prepared for something specific. To your point that if you have a jar of Herbes de Provence, very little chance that you would make a cocktail with it or an ice cream. And my thought that if the blends that I will create will have a name that's fairly generic, you know, it will encourage maybe people to, you know, use them in different ways, and they will not be trapped by the name on the jar itself.
Okay, I got it. So you're really opening up people's horizons to using your blended spices in not just in the ways you suggest, but in a wide variety of different ways as well.
I would, yeah, the only inspiration that I would like for you to have is when you open the jar. If I could sell them without a label, it would be even better. Unfortunately, we do need labels on products, and I think it's just fascinating to see the reaction of different people to the same exact blend. And even if you have that jar, and I have a blend that's called Luberon, that's inspired by the south of France, or what you would maybe call Herbes de Provence, you could use it today for lamb and tomorrow for fish, and if you're making shortbread cookies with strawberries for the weekend, you can also use it.
Wow.
No, we've been in that region of France. We know the Luberon, so it's not hard to see the connection, because Luberon is really a part of the whole area of Provence, and it's one that's particularly well known for its lavender.
Exactly.
A couple of other examples, if you would.
A couple of other examples, even a blend like the Bombay, which obviously the name kind of implies what the inspiration was. It's a curry blend. And for quite a while, I was looking to do a curry blend that would work well with my biscuits, because most of curry blends that are out there are very harsh or very savory oriented. So I created my own curry blend that worked perfectly for my dates biscuits, and since has been used in, of course, baking and ice cream and chocolate making and crab salads and cocktails and you name it, because it doesn't say Madras or it doesn't say garam masala, it just says Bombay, you know, and you know, or blends like Apollonia, which does not mean a thing to most people, which is made out of cocoa powder and orange blossom. And most people will pick it up and will be more oriented towards dessert, yet the majority of people use it from anywhere from lobster to wild boar to squash. And I think that's, again, the beauty and the success, I hope and believe, of these products, is that they really mean something different to different people.
Now, Anne was mentioning earlier on that you also create spice blends, if you like, custom spice blends for some of the better-known chefs in the country. How does that business develop? I mean, it's kind of interesting. Do they say, I want something sort of like this, and then you go from there and take them in a different direction, or how do you decide what the right direction is?
I'm very fortunate, you know, to work with about 50 or 60 chefs or pastry chefs or mixologists all over the world, and we have established this great relationship where when they are working on new preparation, whether sweet, savory, or drinks, the same way that they will do some research with their meat provider or vegetable producer or etc., spices have become also a very important ingredient in the seasoning. So they pay as much attention in the last few years to what they're going to season it with. And they will usually give me a call, and we will start a conversation, you know, about what are they trying to achieve. And I think the 20 years or more that I spent in kitchen is really a great addition to this conversation.
Oh, sure.
Because we do understand each other. And it's a process that could take a few days, it could take a few months before I, you know, create a few samples that they could start cooking with, and they will give me their feedback, and hopefully sooner than later we both agree on the final product, and they will start using it. And for the most part, they will even keep it even after they're done with that particular preparation or menu for a next season or for a next recipe. And you know, the guys from the kitchen would give some to the guys at the pastry, and they would start using them, and then it ends up at the bar. And
well, so now, tell me this. Do these blends that you do for, say, Eric Repair, or I don't remember who the other chefs are, but anyhow, do they become proprietary to them, or can you add those to your list of spice blends?
I did until recently add, when I thought that the blend, obviously they're all great blends, but sometimes I feel like that the blend is a really unique thing in a way that I don't feel that the home cooks will really be able to use it properly.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the 42, or I'd say more than 50% of these 41, I'm sorry, blends that are available for the home cooks are a result of this customized blend, if you will, you know. A lot of them that are on the list, they were made with all of these chefs. I definitely add them as I go along to the catalog, if you want to call it that way. I just stopped adding them just because 41 is a lot for me to handle. Not to say that in the future I will not add some more, but as of now, I am not adding anything new.
Okay, so we know that these 41 are available in your shop, and also are they available online?
Correct.
Okay, and you have a website. Could you give us that?
The website is laboitny.com.
laboitny.com. And so people can look up on this and see these blends, and they are rather extraordinary. Just to give some idea here, you have number 41 is Lula, which is a blend of seaweed, coriander, fennel seeds, and salt. Now, what would you use that with?
I use the Lula for salad dressing. I use it for fish. I use it even with pork chops, or just a simple mixture with yogurt that I use as a dip. So really diversify, you know, blend again. The seaweed brings in beautiful saltiness. I like to do a Caesar dressing with it and remove the anchovy. My wife doesn't like anchovies, so this is a good compromise.
Now, so many people don't like anchovies. I don't understand it. But then I guess, yeah, if you're Sicilian, you like anchovies.
Yeah.
To give some further idea, I just opened the book, and here on the, this is number 20, it's called Dolly. On the left-hand side of the spread of this page is an exquisite photograph. Now, your photographer is very closely related to you, and you have you certainly have comments about that. You must work very well together.
We did the book ourselves. I self-published the book, and I did all the propping and styling and recipe testing, and I collaborated with Thomas Schauer, who is an amazing photographer, and we've known each other for over 10 years now. And there was just the two of us in the studio for the most part, and we just had a great working relationship. We managed to shoot this whole book in 10 days.
What? Really?
Yep. And the whole book from start to finish took 6 months.
Wow. I mean, I've not heard of that. I mean, I'm usually looking at 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But here on this left-hand side of the page, now you have a prop, a dish, and you have the chili seeds, you have the chilies, it looks like saffron, orange peel dried, it looks like. Then on the right-hand side of the spread, you have your inspiration for this, such as Salvador Dali's later surrealist works inspired this blend. After working with saffron and lemon, I spent days with stained yellow fingers and powdered blonde hair, etc., etc. So you have your personal touch in that little essay that you have with each of these pages and recipes. Then you have a section, quote, next to that, recipe ideas. And you say, add to chicken or vegetable broth, blend with roasted garlic and mayonnaise, combine with, and then also grate with, and then you have little icons for crab boil, poached fish. So, I mean, people get a really good clue. The only thing they're really lacking is your spices, so they have to actually purchase those.
Yes, and as I mentioned before, this book was created after 2 or 3 years of nonstop requests via phone or email from customers who already had the blends or were planning on purchasing them and were looking for new ideas on how to use the blends. And I finally, after emailing a lot of people and spending a lot of time on the phone, decided that maybe the best idea would be to put all of my thoughts, ideas, and recipes in the book that will allow people who had the blends or, again, were going to get them to have a great tool with the blends. It's definitely not the book that you're going to pick up randomly and then realize that you need to buy the spices. They go with each other. Not to say that you can have this book, and if you are a good enough cook, you will be inspired and will be able to create recipes, because each of these blends has also a full recipe done by one of my chef's client's friends, and you could easily do that recipe. And if you didn't have the Dali number 20 and you wanted to make that egg salad, you could definitely substitute it with a little bit of curry powder or a little bit of saffron and chilies and get a great egg salad. But the main idea and goal of this book is to give solutions for people who already have the blends or, again, are going to purchase them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say I worked in reverse, seeing what you're doing. Of course, I heard about your reputation. You are so esteemed in the culinary field for these, the praise about the magic of these blends just moved me to email you about them. But now that I see the book and see the possibilities, then I am going to have to order these blends and attack some of these recipes because everything looks so extraordinary.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I see only one problem which you haven't solved yet, but I'm sure your ingenuity as a work on this, and that's how you smell the spice blend over the internet.
Yeah, coming up soon. The
coming soon.
Smell on the internet, yes.
So
you gotta leave, I think, at one point something, you know, to be desired and to be waited for. You know, we cannot provide people. I think the mystery is part of it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your story on the menu, and we wish you continued success, and may there be more than 41.
Thank you very much. Thank you both.
Leroy, thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And coming up right after the break, another view of what to do about flavor from an English woman who wants to open a restaurant, by the way, so if you want to invest in a restaurant in London, you might pay special attention. That's right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and this next book, the title of the cookbook is no lie. It's called Full of Flavor, and indeed it is. And Maria Elia has a really interesting approach, I think, to letting your creativity loose and flavors. And some of her suggestions are amazing. Anyhow, let's listen to Maria.
Well, I thought this thing about mind maps was fascinating. So,
yeah, it is.
So even if you're not interested in food, you might find mind maps in and of themselves to be very interesting. And you can also find out how to make an investment in Maria's restaurant, which we'd like to open in London as well. So close to the end of the interview, watch out for details of that as well. I hope it's a place that's going to be on our map for London coming up very soon, because this lady sounds like she knows her flavors really well.
Maria Elia tackles what I find to be a very difficult problem with cooking. It's how you get people who are not experienced chefs to develop flavor memories and figure out what to put with what. Maria, you did an amazing job with this book called Full of Flavor, subtitled How to Create Like a Chef. And I love the little note from the New York Daily News that says that you eagerly encourage substitutions and flavor exploration. And you do. I mean, I'm not so sure that people would have your amount of creativity on their own, however. Talk to us a little bit about this book.
I wouldn't ever. I was listening to you talk then, and I thought, wow, a problem. It's a problem to create, and it's like, I guess I'm lucky that I don't really think that people should think of it as a problem. I think they should, because people get stressed out about what they should cook, and they get stressed about flavor combinations. But really, there isn't a right or a wrong. It's what they actually find appealing, what appeals to their palate. And once they establish that, what appeals to them, whether they like spicy, sour, sweet, then they can work around their own palate and make it fit.
So
and yes, there are a few rules. If you put something spicy, it's usually better if there's a little sweet in there as well. So your tongue actually has sense of flavors on it that like hot, sweet, sour, and spicy. So if you work out a meal that encompasses all of those things, it's more balanced. But that people go, oh my gosh, now you're already confusing me. But it's just a point of, I think when you cook, you need to relax and you need to really enjoy it. If you're enjoying what you're doing, the end result will taste better already, you know. And we have to eat anyway. We have to eat to survive. So we may as well have a bit of fun doing it, you know?
Yeah, well, you give permission, you essentially give the reader of your cookbook permission to play around with different flavors to find out what's appealing and successful.
Yeah, for sure. I think that so many people write cookbooks and they expect them to be used like a dictatorship. I think that's wrong. I want to encourage people to take the recipe and do their own thing with it. I get emails from people going, oh, I made your so-and-so, and then I tried it with this, and it's like, wow, that's fabulous. That's exactly what I wanted you to do, you know. And that's why I made a piece in the end of the book, like a workbook, that you could actually physically write in your cookbook. Firstly, I'd never dream of writing any of my cookbooks. I hate taking them into the kitchen in case I splash them. But this book is more like a workbook, so you can take it in the kitchen and you can actually personalize each recipe.
Well, now, you work around 18 of your most favorite ingredients, right?
Well, there's more, but my publisher said if you carry on writing about your favorite ingredients, we'll have an encyclopedia. She made me stop.
Well,
and the book would have probably taken a couple more years to publish.
Well, yeah, I love the graphics as well as the photographs in this book.
See, that's how I work everything out that I'm going to cook. If I'm a bit stuck, I usually draw myself a mind map. And the mind maps that I do are a little bit more detailed than the mind maps in the book. But these are more simple versions, but to give the reader an idea of how I get there. And there's a fabulous graphic designer that also did my website. So she really kind of, she understood my mind.
Yeah.
Which isn't easy to do.
Ah, well, tell us more. What is a mind map in your eyes?
Okay, so if I said to you, carrot, give me five things that come to your head when you think carrot.
Carrot.
Yeah.
You want me to do this?
Yeah, tell me what you think when I say to you carrot.
Cardamom. Let's see.
It can be anything.
Butter.
That's what you say.
How about red?
Orange. He's orange. Colorblind.
You're so rude.
Boiled, roasted, good
okay.
for your eyes.
Right, so then you would write in the middle of your page, carrot, and then off of each, you do a branch off, and then you write those things. So say you said cardamom, say. Or you think orange, then you think orange, then you think about colours when you eat food, what appeals with orange. Then green goes well with orange, you know, it's bright. So that could be a route that you go down, or then you said cardamom. So then cardamom's quite kind of spicy and slightly earthy, and it's very aromatic. So then what would you balance out with carrot and cardamom? So maybe carrot and cardamom might go together go well together if they were sweet rather than savoury as well. So maybe you could make a carrot cardamom muffin, see. So then you start writing things down, and you're never wrong, it's just what comes to you. And then from that, from each branch, you extend the branch and keep writing words that come across. And then you make up dishes. And before you know it, you've got a whole page on carrots.
Now, how does the flavour come in? We talked about colour just now, but...
cardamom, so it's quite spicy, quite a spicy, aromatic pod, isn't it? Which can be used in sweet and savoury. So if you think about cardamom, it's aromatic and carrots are sweet. Maybe you might want to add something a little bit neutral. So maybe you might add, say, an almond. Because if you think about cardamoms in Indian cuisine, they use cardamom and almonds quite a lot, say in a curry.
Yeah, I just found the recipe number 58 in your book, and it's a spiced carrot puree with dukkha, and in the dukkha you've got, which is that mixture of seasonings,
you've got
almonds, coriander seeds, cumin seeds, sesame seeds, sea salt, and black pepper. Now that's very interesting.
But then you could add cardamom to that as well.
Right.
So you need to, the thing to do is to experiment, you know. And you keep adding. The other thing to do is keep tasting. When you make something, keep tasting it every little stage, because the more, just like salt, for example, you taste something and it tastes flat. Then you add a little bit of salt and then it comes to life. You add a little bit more and then it really comes to life. And then maybe you do the same with, say, lemon juice. You know, and every time you keep tasting, you feel the ingredients change. So it shouldn't be something that people should be scared of. So, going back to the carrot, cardamom, almonds, you could add cinnamon. Cinnamon goes well with cardamom. It's just experimentation, really.
But your experimentation is, you have a lot of experience. So, I mean, how many of us would come up with a watermelon and seafood curry? I mean, I think you could have somebody fill 45 pages and not come up with that.
No, well, that's fair enough. Well, that's hopefully why you buy the book, isn't it?
Exactly.
But I have a little obsession with watermelon, you see.
Uh-huh.
And my dad, when I was a kid, used to always bring massive watermelons home, and I just could live off watermelon. And then one day I went to South Africa many years ago, and I ate a watermelon curry. And but it wasn't anything like the curry in my book. It was more based on was kind of Mauritian. And it was a bit bland. And then I got to thinking, what could I do with that? And I love Asian flavours too. And I thought, well, Asian flavours and the watermelon go really well together, they're really fresh. So then I thought, well, I'll just experiment. And I hadn't got a clue how it would go, but I thought if I pureed the watermelon up and then cooked it down like you would tomatoes, what would happen? It would either evaporate and you'd end up with some mush, or maybe it might thicken, or I didn't really know, but I thought I'd give it a shot. And it just, it thickens. So once that happened, thickens like a tomato, like a tomato sauce. So then I just thought I'd play around with adding flavors to it.
Well, I mean, I think that the concept itself is something that people need to be encouraged to push themselves into. But I think they also need a lot of experience eating to be able to envision even the vague possibility of some of these recipes. And I think it's going to be very exciting for people to tackle this book and try to push themselves.
Now, just for reference purposes, Maria, you are a working chef?
At the minute, I'm working on a lot of projects. I'm not necessarily... I'm not in a single restaurant at the moment because I'm trying to find investment for my own restaurant.
Oh, there you go. Well, so, good luck with that one.
Yeah, so I'm putting it out there to all these people listening. Anybody, go for some money.
Oh, that's
you
great.
You don't ask, you don't get.
But you did mention earlier, you do have a blog. So in addition to the book, people can get in touch with you by joining your blog.
I do have a blog, but it's on my list of things to do, actually.
Oh, you don't have a blog, okay.
No, I have a website in it, and my email address and my website.
Okay, now
and people write to me like that.
So the website is
www.thisismariaelia.com.
Say that again.
It's www.thisismariaelia.com.
So when people have money, they want to donate to you for a restaurant. Would it be in London, your restaurant?
Yeah, it's going to be in London.
Well, you have a lot of stiff competition. We just got back there, and I think they're opening 150 of every day.
There are some amazing restaurants in London. It's like a wonderful place to live.
Oh, yeah, some of these great places.
Mine's going to be different.
Yours will be different.
Well, you must be sure. You must be sure to get back in touch with us and tell us more about it as soon as you get the project off the ground and you're ready to talk about it. We'd love to hear about it, and
I'd love to talk to you about it too.
And I promise we'll come. How about that?
Yeah, we could do that.
We could do that.
Yeah,
we got leftover places from our last trip.
There you go.
But you know,
give this,
listeners some idea is when you're talking about recipes including or treatments you're including, you don't just do like appetizers, mains, and desserts. I mean, you have a section on birds, a section on pork, a section on oily fish, on white fish, grains and pulses, berries. I mean, it's very encompassing, your list of ingredients that you're teaching people to work with.
Well, I think they're ingredients that people use every day. You know, I mean, white fish, oily fish, or they're accessible ingredients, you know, to start with. And that's why I offer the variations, because I wrote that book and I'm based in London, where I have a wonderful, you know, wealth of ingredients and access to different shops and amazing butchers and fishmongers. But I know that I'm lucky like that, and some people, you know, live in the middle of nowhere and have limited access. So I try to encompass those ingredients. But also now we're lucky, aren't we? If someone lives in the middle of Outer Hebrides in the UK, they could go online, and there's so many companies now that go online and they can order, like, yellow rock sugar for, say, an Asian red braid. So it's not, you know, everything's accessible these days. So we're lucky. We're really lucky.
Now, would your restaurant be like your cookbook? I mean, what?
Yeah. It'd be a bit crazy. My restaurant's going to be like my new cookbook.
Which is what?
Which is out in end of September, October this year.
Okay, and it's called?
It's called Smashing Plates.
Smashing Plates. Okay.
What do you think when I say to you smashing plates?
Well, I mean, like, the restaurant that you're thinking of would be specifically not smashing plates, but what?
But when you hear about people smashing plates, do you think of anything?
Well, I think first of all that Anne's misinterpreting smashing, because smashing just means really good.
Yeah, but also Greeks smash plates.
They do for celebrations. Okay, right. They smash plates.
And weddings.
And then there's what's the artist who started up just making huge collages with smash plates?
Who did that?
Who was that, Ron?
Should I know? I never even heard of such a thing.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, I'd like to find the artist. Well, see, because I'm half Greek, and
oh, are you really?
My dad's Greek Cypriot, and we grew up, and my mother's English, so I grew up with lots of Greek customs and spending half my childhood eating Greek food.
Oh, I love Greek food. I owned a Greek restaurant in Philadelphia once.
You ate?
I owned a Greek restaurant in Philadelphia.
Wow, did you?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyhow, we're getting sidetracked because Peter makes nervous because I'm such a lateral thinker, and I think you are too.
Yeah, I'm easily distracted.
And he likes ducks in a row.
Why don't you lateral think your way into another direction, and we'll let Maria get onto her day because it's almost dinner time. And what's on Maria's table tonight?
No, there's nothing on Maria's table tonight because Maria's going out to a party.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Someone's birthday party.
Well, have a great time, and be sure to talk to us again when your restaurant's getting off the ground or when your new book's coming out, whichever occurs first.
Yeah, make sure we get to see this book.
Yeah, it's really exciting because it's about, it's taking my Greek heritage, but redesigning dishes with Greek ingredients.
Wow.
Because I've never been taught how to cook classical Greek dishes. Well, a few, but I've always been brought up with Greek flavors, so I've just taken them on my own kind of flavor journey.
I'm excited about that. That'll be exciting to see. And
it's looking gorgeous. I've just got the
so people,
the
please
stuff
send this. Money so we can get this restaurant off the ground for money. Thank you so much, Maria. Please send money. Maria, thank you so much.
Lovely to talk to you.
And you too.
Take care. Yeah. Bye.
And we'll be back with another view of flavor profiles, especially flavors loved by many Americans, right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, y'all. We're going to be talking to a good old Southern guy here, a good cook who's slimming down his mama, Paula Deen's recipes, and you're going to break the news.
Yeah,
you're going to do a reveal, are you not, Rabbit?
Well, he has another very interesting episode that he refers to in the interview, that he announces that he just got engaged to be married.
Yeah.
And I think he's held out for a pretty long time. Yeah. I think he's almost 40 years old.
But
apparently much in love
42.
With this beautiful lady that he talks about as well. So here's Bobby Dean taking on how to make Paula Deen's recipes, perhaps, shall we say,
less dense in calories and lower in fat.
There you go. Okay. So
more healthful.
So way to go, Bobby, and here he is.
Bobby Dean, we've interviewed you a number of times, and each time it's a new book. You really are prolific on your book writing, huh?
I'm a very lucky man to have the opportunity to do this kind of work, and I'm really, really proud of this new book.
Well, it's called From Mama's Table to Mine, and I think anybody who, well, I mean, everybody knows your mother and mama, and I think they could probably figure out what you actually did. If somebody picks up this book, you'll find pretty much the comfort food that your mother has always made, but shoot, we're now dealing with 350 calories or less per each dish. How did you do that?
Well, the idea was, you know, really, when you think about it, what took me so long to do this? Because my mother has been, obviously, with the Food Network, and she's been a cookbook author for a number of years. I think approaching 13 years on television. And she really focuses on our heritage, food that we grew up eating, and our very, very Southern traditions. And I'm a food lover. I'm a Southern guy, clearly, and I'm a food lover. So it was a really elementary thing for me to, you know, what I don't think a lot of people do, Ann, is inspect recipes. So I literally sat down and pored over my mother's recipes and inspected them, and I found the major villains in the recipes, which sometimes it was easier to find those than others, and just tried to dial those back in any way that I could in very elementary ways to reduce the fat and calories. So it was a very simple process. It was a labor of love, and it was labor intensive as well, but it was a lot of fun to do it.
Now, your mother's also come out in public on television and various places saying that she's changed her diet as well. Did she start cooking from your cookbook?
Well, I don't think so, Peter.
I don't think so either.
I think that she made her own changes. A lot of people know that it's related, Peter, to what you said, but my mother was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and that was a public announcement, and people know it. And she's aware that she's a public figure. She's also aware that a lot of people admire her and what she has accomplished in her life and her success story. And when she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, she knew that the responsible thing for her to do was to take control of it and manage it. And my mother has a very good relationship with her doctor. My mother takes her medication. And another part of having diabetes is you have to deal with the food aspect of it. So
does she also exercise more? Because you include
it. She does. I'm really proud of my mother because I'm a person who enjoys activity. And I enjoy running and lifting. It's just who I am. Everyone's different. And I would never want to wag my finger in anyone's face and suggest what they should do or how they should live. But I would like to think that my lifestyle has been an example to her. And it was a good transition for her to begin to. You can do very simple things. You can get yourself a pedometer and you can just begin to walk and you can drink more water. And I think that once you begin down that path, it becomes a lifestyle. And she's embraced it. She's lost, I think, 40 pounds
or
so.
Yeah, I heard 40. And, that's pretty good.
That's very good. And for a woman, Ann, you as a woman know that it's not as easy for a woman to change her weight as it is for a man.
Yeah,
so she's really put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah, well, she's looking gorgeous.
Thank you. She's reinvigorated. She's with my, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm like my mama in that I will talk until you tell me to shut up. But my brother has a beautiful wife and two beautiful children. And my cousin Kari, who is my Uncle Bubba's daughter, has recently had a baby. She's married to a wonderful man. She's recently had a baby. And there are babies being born throughout our family. And my mother sees everything that she's got to live for, take care of herself for, and she's doing it. But I don't think that you're going to see her television show change. I think that there is a lot of entertainment value in what my mother does on Paula's Home Cooking or Paula's Best Dishes, what you see her cooking. I don't think she's encouraging people to eat that way every day. I think she's sharing true Southern heritage because when you look at the food that my mother is well known for, people say Paula Deen is generally followed by the Butter Queen. That is not just my mother, and Peter. This is, if you come to Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana, this is just the way that people cook. It's something to be celebrated. People travel to this area just to eat the food.
Yeah, our kids live in South Carolina, so I know that route. Yeah. Listen, Bobby, you have this book is loaded with photographs of you looking like a hunk. Don't tell me that was accidental. These are planted photos to show that it works.
Well, that's really kind of you. I appreciate it. We talked about exercise. I hope I didn't interrupt you. You had a further thought on that.
I mean, I was just saying you include it in your book because I think people are crazy if they think that they could just cut calories and just lose weight. You've got to do the other part of it, too. And you mentioned...
You do, and... Yeah. You do, and that's the part that you have to be, that I am very cautious of, because it's a personal thing to embrace exercise. Not everyone feels good. People have joint problems. People have arthritis. People are busy. They have schedules. They have families and children, and all I want to do is encourage people and let them know that there is a very symbiotic relationship between your body and your food, and exercise is included in that. You just said it. You can't just cut calories and all of a sudden you're going to have a much improved physique. You can certainly change your weight, but you've got to exercise. You've got to move your body. It's meant to be moved. Our bodies are capable of far more than what we get them credit for. And it's part of it. It's part of it for sure.
Talk us through some of the recipes where perhaps you made the most radical changes.
Well, I have a request. My favorite, I don't crave a lot of stuff because I eat for a living, you know that. So I don't crave a lot of stuff. But one thing I do crave, and I've gotten such bad news about it lately, and now I see you've got a recipe for it, is a Reuben sandwich.
Are you a sandwich girl?
I am a Reuben girl. And here you have it. It's what I've been hearing, except you're not even as encouraging as some people are. I heard it had 1,200 calories. You say originally it had 900. And just so people understand, there's a section here at the bottom of each recipe called Breaking It Down. And you do a before and after. And you do calories before you modify the recipe at 900. After you modify the recipe, 168. Fat, you reduce from, 70 grams to 4.5 grams. How did you do that? And am I going to like this, Reuben?
It's remarkable, is it not?
Yeah.
And that's a very important part of the book that people are really enjoying, is that I'll give you the protein and the carbohydrate counts and the fiber and the sodium. So people who are to be very conscious of that, it's a very helpful book. But one very elementary thing is portion size. I'm not sure that people really understand what a portion is anymore, Ann and Peter. Yeah. I think that we're accustomed to being overserved, and I think our food is that we're accustomed to it being overseasoned.
Yeah.
So this is just a fairly light recipe. If you take a look at it, I think you'll see that I'm using a lot of Greek yogurt, which is fat-free.
Low-fat Swiss cheese. Bobby,
yeah,
I'm going to love this turkey pastrami.
I hope and think that you will. I think that the same way we're conditioned to enjoy very fattening foods, we can, if we intersect the relationship between food and exercise, we can also learn to enjoy lower fat and calorie foods as well. Would you tell the difference between this Reuben and one that my mother made you? Definitely you would. would mine be very satisfying and delicious? Of course it would. And one of the things about these recipes, y'all, is that if you were to come to my house and I were to feed you anything from this book, and I didn't tell you beforehand that it was light, I don't think that you would put your finger on it. I don't think you would say, oh, wow, that was not a very satisfying sandwich, or that was not very good, or that tasted light. These recipes all managed to be very tasty, and there's a reason that we went for 350 calories. We didn't just pull that out of the air. I knew that 350 calories was a very doable number for recipes, and it could still maintain, with 350 calories per serving, you could still maintain the integrity of the recipe, and you could still have good flavor. But if you take a look at it again, you'll see Greek yogurt, you'll see low-fat Swiss cheese, you'll see things that are very simple decisions that people can make, choices that people can make in the grocery store. And if you do three or four different things to a recipe that change it in caloric and fat counts. When you get three or four things done, you can make drastic differences to recipes.
You said you fooled your mother. The chicken salad?
I don't know if you can fool her. And my mother is, if she is nothing at all, she's very honest. So if she doesn't like something, she'll tell me. So I've had to go back and tweak some different things. But for instance, my mother makes, gosh, just the most wonderful macaroni and cheese. It's just, it is what it is. It just is what it is. And I've got two or three different versions of macaroni and cheese. They're lighter, and the first time I fed it to my mother, she was like, I don't like it.
Did she say that? She told you that.
But let me tell you the way that when I started to work on this book and when I started the television show that I do on the Cooking Channel, it's called Not My Mama's Meals, and then this book is called From Mama's Table to Mine, so you can see the connection to everything. But when I started with it, I said, I'm going to take this wonderful food that I'm accustomed to eating on Sundays in the South and turn that Sunday food into Monday food. So I'm certainly not asking people to deprive themselves of the things that they love. I'm just letting people know that there's an alternative way to prepare, because I cook a lot of the same things that my mother does, but I just prepare them differently. A giant difference can be made just in the preparation.
Now, how about, here are a couple, meatloaf and shrimp and grits. Why don't you break down?
Well, the meatloaf is a very simple thing to do, is to buy ground turkey. Is a really simple thing to do. I think that, what was the other, the shrimp and grits?
Yeah, shrimp and grits.
You know what makes shrimp and grits so good is lots and lots of butter and lots of heavy cream.
Right.
And we cut those things way, way back. But the turkey meatloaf, the main thing there is that it's a very, very lean meat. Again, the answers to these questions are so elementary, it's almost embarrassing when people ask, how did you do it? And I'm like, well, I didn't buy real fattening meat. And if you look at it, there are carrots involved, there's only one egg in the recipe, a little Worcestershire sauce, there's not a whole lot to it. The ketchup, if you look at the amounts of what we use in the recipe, you can see that the ingredients are very, very, they're not a large portion of the ingredients. Like, you could use a whole lot more than 2 tablespoons of ketchup if you chose to. Which is, it's not, the ketchup is incredibly fattening, but it's got loaded with sugar. And if you can find the things that do have in them, the things that are not as so good for you, and dial them back or replace them altogether, it's a simple thing to do. So, again, very elementary. Ground turkey instead of ground beef. You could use ground buffalo as well.
Yeah,
which is a great meat to use. So it's a really simple decision to make to buy an extra lean ground beef as well if you choose to. So it's the simple everyday decisions that we make in the supermarket.
And is your brother eating this way too?
Well, and we all have found our way to this point on different paths. For me, it began at 30 years old. I just said, you know, I don't really feel great. I'm taking far better care of this business than I am of my own body. So let me just begin to embrace some exercise. It had nothing to do with narcissism or anything of that nature. I just wanted to feel better. So I began to go down that path. My mother was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, so that made her need to make a change. And my brother, again, I mentioned to you, has 2 beautiful sons. He's got one that'll be 7 years old this year and one that's 1 year old. And he has made a great difference in his diet just through having children, because he wants to feed them healthy, healthful foods that will be good for them. So he's changed his diet by having a family. So is he using my recipes? I know that he likes them and appreciates them. More importantly, his wife is using my recipes. His wife texted me, and we see each other quite often, so we don't have to communicate through text. But she texted me a couple of days ago and said, hey, I just made your lasagna, and it was absolutely one of the best that I've ever made. And it was a very light recipe. So I think that the same way that I learned to cook growing up in the South and in Paula Deen's home was sort of by osmosis, I think that my recipes and my way of cooking are sort of finding their way deeper into my family through osmosis as well.
Now Bobby, before you go, now you're not married, right?
I became engaged to the most beautiful woman just this weekend, Peter. So
congratulations. That was I saying I was going to give all the young ladies in our audience a tip that not only were you very handsome and very wealthy, but you could also cook.
Well,
what a deal I have for you! But now you're saying you're off the market, huh?
Well, I have met, I'm such a lucky man, and I've had just beautiful, sweet, wonderful people with great character come through my life, and I've just waited until I've met absolutely the right person to get married, and I now, at 42 years old, I met the most beautiful woman who is a triathlete.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're like-minded. She is just hearty and full of life and a little younger than me, but we're like-minded and we see things alike, and she stole my heart. And I've known her for a couple of years. We began to see each other seriously not too long ago, but I just knew it. I knew it when I met her, but I wasn't available. I was not emotionally available to her.
We better let you go because
we're going to get into all kinds of other things.
But anyhow, I proposed to her on this Friday night.
Congratulations.
And I'm a lucky man. Thank you.
Now, the only thing we're missing was a wedding invitation.
It's in the mail.
So this story started off once upon a time, and it ends up, and they lived happily ever after. We certainly wish you that.
Well, thank you. I certainly hope so, and God willing. I think we make plans, and God laughs while we do it. So, you know, everything is in His time, and it happens the way that He'll have it be, and I'm just enjoying my life. I'm in the best place I've ever been.
Okay, Bobby, that's great news. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Bobby. Bye-bye.
I've enjoyed being with you. Y'all are so pleasant. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care, Ann Peter. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. We'll be back same time, same place next week. We hope you'll join us then. And in the meantime,
bye-bye.